Docket is 10 SC711. The petitioner is Stewart Software Company LLC versus the respondent, Richard Kopko. Are both parties present and ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Just for reminders, each side has a half hour. Petitioner will have to keep track of your own time, and I would appreciate it if at the time you start your argument, you state your name and whom you represent. With that, we'll hear from the petitioner.
May it please the court. My name is Jeffrey Villanueva. I'm here on behalf of the petitioner, Stewart Software Company. The issue upon which this court granted certiorari is whether the defendant was entitled to a jury instruction on federal copyright ownership. If we're talking solely about whether the three instructions regarding federal copyright, which were tendered by the defendant, should have been given, the answer to that question is very simple, and it's no. These instructions were not supported by the evidence at trial, and if given, would have been misleading and confusing. They were also a blatant misstatement of the law. You could not possibly have given these three instructions without anything more, such as instructions on the quote-unquote work-for-hire part of Section 201 or the quote-unquote collective work section of 201C. The instructions tendered by the defendant quoted only part of 17 U.S.C. Section 201A. Basically, it only quoted the first sentence of a very long statute. Did not include the sections of the statute about work-for-hire or collective work, and the remaining sentences were simply made up. They submitted to the court an instruction that said this is what the statute said, and it simply does not say that. I would respectfully suggest that you look at the instruction that they submitted and compare it with 17 U.S.C. 201. It's a misstatement of the law.
Mr. Villanueva, can I just ask you a clarification question? I'm under the impression that there is one instruction. I didn't quite get the three.
If you look at the
That was the cert. I'm sorry. If I look at what?
If you look at the attachments to our opening brief, there were really two instructions that basically were identical. Saying that the first one says federal copyright law provides that title to copyright writable material vests initially in the author or authors of the work. That is basically a paraphrase of Section 201. But the other two sentences, ownership of a copyright does not require registration or other action by the author to receive.
You're referring to the, I have viewed it as a paragraph with three sentences.
Oh, yes, it's a paragraph.
So I just want to get on the same page.
Yeah. But there were actually three instructions given, two of which I think are substantially identical. And then the third says, the defendant is not legally responsible on the claim for breach of contract if the affirmative defense of federal copyright law is applied and the jury finds that a non-party RefDog Software is the true owner, and that wasn't supported by any authority. Now, copyright instructions are complicated. If one were to go look at the pattern jury instructions, and there are several circuit courts of appeal that have adopted pattern jury instructions on copyright, they tend to include some 20 instructions, plus or minus. You would have probably needed, if we were going to instruct this jury on copyright law, 10, 15, 20 instructions to properly instruct the jury on this issue, and the defendants really tendered only one, which we resubmit was not supported by the evidence and was an incomplete statement, an inaccurate statement of the law. The defendant's argument at trial was that this entity named RefDog Software, Inc., which is unrelated to Holonix, Inc., unrelated to Stewart Software Company, no privity of contract with any of the parties to the case, their position was that RefDog Software, Inc., was the owner of the software because Mr. Kopcho had personally directed his in-house counsel to file a registration statement in that name on July 12 of 2007, the same date when he locked Stewart Software Company out of the access to the website, out of access to the software code that they were able to look at online, and basically kept all the materials. The defendants did not claim, nor was there any evidence, that Mr. Kopcho or Holonix Inc. were the author of the software. And in fact, there was no explanation at all as to why Rough Dog Software Inc., company solely owned by Mr. Kopcho, came to have this software registered in its name, except for the fact that Mr. Kopcho wanted to take the software away from Stewart Software Company and put it in a company that he owned, and didn't even put it in the name of Holonix, which was the software developer.
Sir, Mr. Villanueva, can I just make positive? I understand the SSC and Mr. Walter actually had this idea, right? And
absolutely.
They asked Kopcho, you're saying it, who's operating as Holonix?
Correct.
To develop it, essentially.
Absolutely, Your Honor. When it first began, it was Mr. Walter dealing with Mr. Kopcho, and Mr. Kopcho, shortly after the inception of the relationship, said that he was doing business under the name of a company called Systems Enterprises, LLC, doing business as Holonix.
Sure.
Over time, he formed another company called Holonix, Inc. He kept sending bills under Holonix. There was never any disclosure as to the change in name or change in entity, but yes, absolutely, Your Honor. The software was being developed pursuant to a non-disclosure agreement. It was Mr. Walter's idea. Mr. Kopcho and Holonix were not in the banking business. Mr. Walter was in the banking business. Mr. Walter had this idea for this very specialized computer software to enable lenders to monitor their loan performance, the loan performance of the loans in their portfolio. And Holonix was implementing or executing the directions of Mr. Walter Stewart Software Company.
I just kind of wanted to get to another point, if I may, and I just wanted to make sure I had the facts down. So then Holonix asked Rough Dogs to develop this,
yes,
to do the actual work. And then Holonix ended up buying or merging, or Rough Dogs ended up becoming part of Holonix?
Yeah, it's a complicated series of events, but what happened was...
What's the bottom line? I don't want to take too much of your time.
The bottom line is that Rough Dogs, Inc. was an independent company that Mr. Kopcho approached as his agent for Stewart Software Company, telling Mr. Walter, I'm picking these people because they're the best. Mr. Walter didn't know that Kopcho was getting a 50% kickback from Rough Dogs, and that Rough Dogs was a company that was teetering on bankruptcy. So Rough Dogs, Inc. was then acquired by Mr. Kopcho, who then created a new entity called Holonix, Inc. Rough Dogs Software, Inc. has no relationship to Rough Dogs, Inc., nor does it have any relationship to Holonix, Inc. The defendants continue in their briefs to refer to Rough Dogs Software, Inc. as a subsidiary, thereby inferring that somehow you could attach the assets of Rough Dogs Software, Inc. with a judgment against Holonix, Inc. But Rough Dogs Software, Inc. was a company created by Mr. Kopcho in January of 2007, total stranger to all of these dealings between Stewart and Holonix. And Rough Dogs Software, Inc. was not the developer, not the author, had no contractual relationship with anybody.
Okay, so then SSC sued these people, Holonix, and whatever they ended up being called, Mr. Kopcho. And particularly relevant here is the civil theft. And what precisely was claimed to have been stolen?
Well, what I would say is that there was a collection of work or work product that was created by Holonix Inc. through either Rough Dogs Inc. or another company called H3 Group, but all under the auspices of Holonix Inc. And it consisted of, I'll call it a basket of products: software, a website, a video, marketing materials, a logo, a basket of materials, which for purposes of this argument, I think we can assume are predominantly copyrightable materials. But we were claiming that there was a contract or an agreement between Mr. Walter on behalf of Stewart Software Company, Mr. Kopcho on behalf of whatever entity it was, that whatever was created and paid for, or was created by Holonix and paid for by Stewart Software Company, would belong to Stewart Software Company, would belong to SSC. And so our theory of the case, and we tried to make it simple, and the defendants tried to make it as complicated as possible, our theory of the case was that we had agreement, own what you pay for, own what you pay for. There was evidence before the jury. There were two emails from Mr. Kopcho. I agree. You own what you pay for. Let's move on. Let's move on and get the contract signed. We've crossed that bridge and we've moved past it. Pay me more money. Let's sign the contract. At the time of trial, the defendants were arguing, no. We never had that agreement. But
your argument is that this basket of copyrightable things was what was stolen from your client. Civil theft.
I acknowledge that for purposes of this argument, we can assume that the basket, I'll call it, contained copyrightable materials.
What do you mean by that?
Okay. Well, what I mean by that is that the software could be copyrighted. I mean, I think some.
Talking about the source and the object code.
That's what was copyrighted. I mean,
the material embodiment. Is that what you're arguing?
Well,
under federal copyright law.
Well, I mean, what I'm trying to do here is concede a factual point for this. I mean, the defendants want to argue that everything is copyrightable, and I'm saying that for purposes of this argument, I think that we can assume that these things would have been copyrightable had the defendants had any right to copyright them.
They claimed what? What was their defense?
Well, their claim is, first of all, that there was no agreement.
No, I mean with respect to what we're talking about here, the search.
Well, their claim,
we understand their factual disagreement.
Their claim is that by secretly filing this copyright registration on July 12 of 2007, the day of what I'll call the lockout, that by virtue of them filing that under the name of Rough Dog Software Inc. and falsely representing that Rough Dog Software Inc. was the author, that thereby Rough Dog Software Inc. became the owner of the property and Stewart Software had no interest, no ownership interest in it. That's their argument.
So they can't steal what they own, is basically their argument.
Well, what they're saying.
And your argument is just one, they can't own it, because they didn't have any right to copyright it.
Correct.
But then you're saying more than that, that it doesn't really matter whether it was copyrighted or not, or that's where I'm starting to get mixed up.
Okay.
Help me with that, Mr. Villanueva.
Well, I am saying that as a matter of contract law, let's use a very, very simple analysis here. Let's say I hire somebody to paint a painting for me, or to write a book for me, to create something that would be intellectual property that's subject to a copyright. If I let's say I hire ABC Company to paint a painting for me, and ABC Company paints that painting, and then some person that's not in privity of contract, such as Mr. Kopcho, comes in and steals the painting, and then goes and copyrights it. Why should I have to go to federal court and file some kind of copyright action against Mr. Kopcho, who has stolen something that doesn't belong to him? I mean, that software did not belong to Mr. Kopcho, and he took it. He directed the filing of a copyright registration in a separate company.
Well, so who did the painting belong to?
The painting belonged to SSC. The painting belonged to the person that commissioned it, the party that commissioned it as a work for hire. And this really gets back to the proposition of, we all understand that a party is entitled to jury instructions that are supported by the evidence. If there is evidence to support the claim, you're entitled to an instruction on that. the other party, conversely, though, is entitled to an instruction that accurately sets forth the law. The evidence before this court was, at best, in the light most favorable to the defendant, that it was a work for hire. I mean, we were contending all along that this work was done pursuant to a non-disclosure agreement, really, except for a couple of minor agreements for, you know, very small portions of work.
Let me ask you just to expand a little bit on what it was that you were contending all along. And the way I'd like to introduce that question to you is that it seems to me that the Court of Appeals just about seems to think that you were basically alleging a theft of copyright. They say, and I paraphrase a little bit on page 8, that in the complaint, SSC defined the property stolen to include the intellectual property rights associated with the software, which seems to me, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that the Court of Appeals seems to think that you know, you were alleging a theft of copyright. Could you explain whether that's true in the course of it being a little more specific about what the claims were, which is where I think you were headed?
Certainly. First of all, let me just state, I think it's pretty clear from our briefs and throughout the course of the case, we have always taken the position that we didn't consider this to be a copyright case. There was no evidence before the trial court that there were ever any discussions about copyright or intellectual property rights other than the owner's what you pay before the litigation ensued. My client did not even know that the copyright registration had been filed on July 12 of 2007 until we showed up at the Replevin hearing 3 months later, and they tried to give us this gotcha moment saying, you have no claim here. Aha, we've copyrighted your software. Now, our position is that whatever work was being performed, whatever work product was being created, intellectual property or simple personal property, that there was a contract, there was an agreement that if we had paid for it, whatever had been paid for belonged to my client. And the evidence before the court was that my client had paid for that which the defendants refused to turn over. I'm not sure if I'm making myself clear, Your Honor, but
let me ask this. How are you separating or distinguishing your claim for whatever it was, for the product, from the right to the copyright? That is, are you claiming something other than the copyright, or are you just using different language for a claim of the copyright?
Well, by the time the case came to trial, we were not asking for any declaration from the court that we had a copyright or that there was infringement or that there were licenses or anything like that. And the final judgment by the court contains no order or declaration about who owns the copyright or anything like that. By the time we got to trial, and I concede that at the Replevin hearing, we were seeking to get back that which had been created. But as time went by and the urgency of getting it prepared had the time had passed, the software was really of no value to us any longer as of the time of trial, and we were simply claiming damages for the breach of contract and for taking away that which had been agreed.
But there has to be, Mr. Villeneuve, it has to be, trying to ask the same question I think that both Justice Martinez and Justice Rice were getting at. What is the very nature, the specific nature of the property that was allegedly stolen, the jury found was stolen, that forms the basis of civil theft? What is it? Did it deal with the ownership of the copyright or not? Because it's not quite clear from your complaint and also from the Court of Appeals. What are we talking about when you say the basket of materials? You use the term software, and then you said video and marketing and stuff like that.
Well, we were claiming that. Let me put it this way. You know, when you're talking about intellectual property, you can have, for example, a book, or you can have a CD, or you can have a thumb drive, or something like that. And that's not part of the intellectual property. And the the language in the book itself. I mean, that's not part of the intellectual property. I mean, but that's copyrightable. We're claiming the whole thing. We're claiming that whatever was created, it was paid for. I hope make this a simpler case for this court. I'm not trying to argue that there's no intellectual property or no copyrightable material here. What I'm arguing to this court is that they had no right to a jury instruction on this because there was no evidence to support their claim that they had a right to a copyright.
Why?
And separate, pardon me?
Why?
Why? Because the evidence before this court, I mean, first of all, starting from the beginning, was that the software that was created was conceived of by Mr. Walter. It was conceived of by Mr.
But, Walter. Let me ask you a question. Let me try to ask you another question. Was the fact that they registered it, let's assume they registered the copyright, that's a fact. Whether they did so, as you, it's irrelevant for me for the purpose of the question as to the how they did it and so forth. Was that in any way, why is that not a defense to stealing the theft charge of the basket of materials, as you're saying?
Well, I would submit that instead of being a defense to that, it's an aggregating factor and it's proof of the theft. To take something, to use the analogy I gave to Justice Rice, to take the painting that I commissioned someone to paint, and then for not the painter to take it away, but for the, you know, someone who's not the painter, to steal the painting and let's say to go register it so that they can, you know, print T-shirts or print posters or something of that painting. I mean, that's essentially what Mr. Kopcho did. The filing of that registration, I mean, was an egregious and fraudulent and deceptive act. And if it hadn't been, why did he conceal it? Why did he do it and never tell Mr. Walter until we showed up at the report and then they, you know, flash this registration and say, aha, you lose.
Counsel, if I could interrupt you briefly. Are you suggesting, though, that the act of registration was an act of theft of copyrights?
Yes. I am saying that Mr. Kopcho, who had no personal ownership interest of this software, assuming anybody owned it besides Stewart Software Company, and we've always contended it was Stewart Software Company, if anybody else had any legitimate claim to it, it would have been Holonix Inc. But for no consideration, for no contract, for no agreement, I mean, Mr. Kopcho claimed that there was some kind of assignment, but he never produced it. For no reason, for no explanation, Mr. Kopcho took something that didn't belong to him. We believe it didn't belong to Holonix, but if it did belong to Holonix, he just took it and he put it in his own name.
I'm struggling with that a little bit, because if the notion is that that act of registration was a theft from Stewart, are you suggesting that Stewart actually owned the copyright to begin with and the act of registration unlawfully took that away?
Stewart would have had the right to copyright it. Stewart, if any person had the right to have it copyrighted, it would have been Stewart Software Company. It was not Mr. Kopcho, and it was not Rough Dog Software Inc. Rough Dog Software Inc. had no right to register that, and they put in the registration that Rough Dog Software Inc. was the author. That was blatantly untrue.
So essentially you argued to the jury that there's a theft of the registration and also that was included in the basket of materials? Is that?
Yes, because there were other things that they took away from us that they did not copyright. They did not copyright the website. They did not copyright the video. They just didn't give us the video. The website was up and it was accessible to my client, and on July 12th of 2007.
Well, let me ask you a question. If you argue that the ownership of the copyright itself, or the registration of the copyright, was stolen from you, then why wouldn't it be a defense that whether the jury would determine whether it was fraudulent or not as a factual matter, but why wouldn't it be a legal defense that, hey, we have it, and here's the evidence of it?
Well, it actually was a defense that was tried before this jury. I mean, to suggest that this jury was constrained somehow to find that Sewer Software Company was the owner is a totally incorrect analysis. I mean, we spent this
entire... I'm not trying to argue that with you, but certainly I know you're an experienced lawyer, and that lots of times people assert defenses they're entitled to assert, which have very little basis in fact. So I guess my question is not so much the underlying factual dispute.
Well, the trial judge heard the evidence, and the trial judge had the discretion to decide whether the evidence before the court would have supported these copyright instructions, and Judge Lammons concluded that the evidence before the court did not support the award of these did not support the giving of these instructions.
Mr. Vieira, well, let me try this, because I hear you saying two things, and I think they're inconsistent. And so maybe you can tell me which one, or that they aren't inconsistent. On the one hand, you seem to be saying, we could have copyrighted this. We had the right to the copyright, and by registering it, they stole our copyright. On the other hand, you seem to be saying, it's irrelevant who has the copyright. We had the use of the stuff in the basket. They took that away from us, and registering just evidenced how they stole things from us, not the copyright, but the painting, not the creation of it, but the ability to portray it in your analogy. So that's why I think that what I'm hearing is inconsistent, and it concerns whether the copyright is at issue or not.
Well, we don't believe that the copyright was at issue. And I do want to save a couple of minutes for rebuttal, but I'd just like to make one point, and I hope that this will address your concern. The defendants pointed out repeatedly at the trial court level, and you know, we've had three different judges, two trial court judges, Judge Blair, Judge Lammons, federal court judge Babcock. The defendants argued in front of three different trial court judges that this case was all about copyright law, and those three judges disagreed. The defendants have argued all along that federal copyright law preempts state law, and up until they tendered the jury instruction, I mean, their position throughout the case was we didn't have a case. We weren't allowed to be in court because we had to be in federal court. Now, although Judge Babcock disagreed and remanded the case, the defendants had every opportunity, if they wished to have a copyright determination, they could have trooped on over to the U.S. District Court, and they could have filed a claim for a declaration that they had a copyright on this and that their copyright was valid. So it's not as if the defendants were deprived of the opportunity to argue the issue of copyright had they thought that it applied. Suddenly, at the time of trial, they tender these jury instructions after contending all along that the state court has no jurisdiction to make any determinations regarding copyright. All of a sudden, you know, at the time of trial, they're asking the jury to decide copyright issues. And I have found a couple of cases, nothing in this in the Tenth Circuit and nothing in Colorado, where state courts have said it's possible where there are some tangential copyright issues as an affirmative defense that you could try them as part of affirmative defense in a state court case. But basically, the law is that if the predominant issue is copyright, it can't be decided in state court. So if they wanted a copyright determination, it would have been...
Well, that's what Babcock said. Is that what Judge Babcock said? Essentially, when the case was removed and he sent it back.
Judge Babcock said exactly what our position was in this case, which is that if you could go out and race down to the copyright office and beat the true owner to the copyright office, then it would basically be a license to steal for defendants to run down to the copyright office and copyright that which did not, in all fairness, belong to them. And Judge Babcock said the case could be decided in state court, without being a federal copyright case. And we think that the case was properly decided in state court without need for federal copyright instructions. I just have a minute and a half left. So.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Lori Sturman, and I represent Mr. Kopcho, the respondent in this case. This case has always been a basic contract case at its core. It's not a case about theft. And Mr. Kopcho's position has always been that Helonix is the owner of the software, the property that was claimed to have been stolen, as the author of the software. Due to the erroneous jury instructions that were given by the trial court, ignoring an entire governing body of law, the jury in this case ended up finding that Mr. Kopcho had stolen software that his own company had spent over a year writing and developing. Federal copyright law clearly applies to a claim of theft of copyrightable material, such as software, and therefore the trial court essentially deprived Mr. Kopcho of presenting his claim of ownership in defense to the claim. The Court of Appeals correctly ruled that the trial court committed reversible error in refusing to instruct the jury on federal copyright law based on its pre-trial ruling that federal copyright law does not apply. And today we respectfully request that this court affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals on this issue. Throughout the case, plaintiff has painted Mr. Kopcho as the villain. However, Mr. Kopcho, through his company Helonix, spent over a year working almost solely for plaintiff in marketing and developing the software.
Who paid for it?
Who paid for the software?
Yeah, who paid for this development?
Stewart Software Company, there were a couple of checks presented in evidence that were from Mr. Walter individually. Within 2 months of hiring Helonix to develop the software, there is an alpha version of the software available. It was plaintiff's own constant requests for changes to the software that substantially increased the time and cost of completing the software and ultimately prevented its completion. Over this year-long relationship, the parties operated under terms of oral agreements that were almost entirely memorialized in writing, except for the one issue that has been central to this case, ownership of the software.
Ms. Sturman, could you focus specifically on the nature of your defense and the instruction you tendered with respect to the property? What was it, the specific claim? In other words, I want to be very narrow and careful in your on my understanding.
Certainly. Mr. Kopcho asserted throughout the case that his company, Helonix Inc., was the owner of the software.
And by virtue of what?
By virtue action? Of authorship.
Mm-hmm.
The federal copyright statute provides that registration is presumptive of ownership, although not determinative. So his position was that his company authored the software and therefore, under the federal copyright statute, was the owner of the software.
Counsel, basis of his ownership, and by that you're talking about the source and the object code, the embodiment.
Correct.
And what was the basis of that? Was the basis of that the registration?
No, the underlying basis of that was the actual work of authoring, drafting, writing, coding, all of those pieces of the software that actually make up the heart of a software program.
How did the registration fit in?
The registration occurred at the time.
No, I mean from your legal. I don't really care about the factual context. How did it support the argument that he was the author or did it?
The registration was intended as a method to protect the owner, Helonix, through its subsidiary, Rough Dogs Inc. At the time that this dispute regarding payment and so forth arose. But registration creates a presumptive ownership issue, but does not determine underlying. If someone was to dispute it, you have to get to the underlying facts of who actually did the work in creating the software. The registration was simply a protective measure.
I take it that's why you took this case to federal court. Is that right? Removed it to federal court?
Correct.
But then Judge Babcock said that was not the issue in this case.
Correct. Judge Babcock essentially determined that, this wasn't a copyright infringement case. This was a state law claim of civil theft. and therefore it could be determined by the state court on the civil theft state law claim rather than...
He said a little bit broader than that, didn't he? He said it wasn't a copyright case at all, really. It was a civil theft case. Because if it had been a question of who had the copyright, he would have kept the case. That would have been federal jurisdiction.
Yes, my reading of his decision was that it was not a copyright infringement. It wasn't relating to specifically claims related to...
ownership of the copyright, right?
Related to claims that... claims under the federal copyright statute as far as infringement. Rather, it was the state law claim relating to ownership and breach of contract and all these other pieces.
Ownership of what, according to Backlock? Because apparently not of the copyright, in his view.
Well, we would respectfully disagree with...
Well, why don't you tell me what his ruling was first, and then you can tell me why it's wrong. So what was his ruling with respect to... What was at issue in the civil theft claim, since it was apparently not the copyright in his view?
I guess kind of repeating what I said somewhat, that his view was that the property, that the claims were related to theft of property rights, not to necessarily infringement of copyright rights, such as the right to distribute, the right to copy, sell, etc. Those are the rights that would be involved in a federal copyright infringement claim. Rather, it was the property rights, the possessory and other included rights that were at issue, and those were determined by or involved in a state law claim. It was not preempted by the federal copyright statute.
Well, that's certainly possible, isn't it? I mean, whether he's right or not, it's certainly possible that you could have a theft of the software without the copyright being in dispute. Is that true?
I don't think you can separate necessarily.
Well, you could with other types of property, can't you? I mean, you could steal my book that I bought, and it's mine, and you stole it, and we have a theft issue there. That doesn't concern the copyright, which actually rests somewhere else. It could be my copyright or yours. More likely, it's someone else's.
Correct. I think you could very specifically distinguish between this is one right, the possessory right to an item such as a book, versus the right to copy or sell or distribute.
Now, isn't that precisely what Babcock thought with respect to the software?
Yes.
Okay, why was he wrong then? Why does this concern something other than the right to have the software in your machines and to use it?
I don't think that he was wrong in that the state law claim perhaps involved more than simply copyright infringement. I think, you know, he may have been valid in that this was not a copyright infringement claim falling directly under remedies under the federal copyright statute. However, I don't believe that he stated that federal copyright law cannot be addressed as a defense to a state law claim.
Well, why would it be a defense unless the copyright itself was at issue?
I believe the federal copyright was at issue.
Well, tell me why it was, because I don't think Bob Babcock thought it was. I mean, isn't that what you just answered to me, in essence, was that Babcock was wrong because he didn't think the copyright was at issue?
Certainly. I believe federal copyright law was at issue, and the copyrights were at issue due to plaintiff's own definition of the property from the very beginning of the case and up through trial. The definition of property that was stated in the initial complaint that was never amended included the intellectual property rights, the source code, and the object code. That's what plaintiff claimed to have been stolen by the defendants in this case. And that's the evidence that was presented to the jury. They heard testimony regarding the copyright registration. They heard
object, you just used the term object code. Is that synonymous with the copyright?
It's part of the software that can be copyrighted.
That's different from the ownership of the copyright, isn't it, under federal law?
Correct.
Can you steal the code without stealing the copyright? Is that possible?
Without being a terribly technically savvy person, as I understand it, source code or object code is something that's drafted in or that you can actually see printed out. So I suppose you could actually hold on to source code or have possession of it without having the right to then sell or distribute it under a copyright.
You could have a theft claim for theft of the code without having a theft claim for theft of copyright, correct?
I believe you could. I don't know what your damages would be to that extent. I think when you're talking about software, what someone wants is the right to use it or distribute it, particularly in this case. But I suppose you could have a claim for theft of the...
Talk to me about particularly in this case in terms of how it is that we know that this case is about the copyright instead of just the code.
One is the definition of property given by the plaintiff, as I already mentioned. But the other piece is that plaintiff sought declaratory judgment as to ownership of the software. Again, we're talking about the property at issue, including the intellectual property and the source code and so forth, and sought an injunction against the defendants from using or distributing or doing anything with the software. And that injunction lasted through trial. There is no release or waiver or dismissal of the injunction claim. So plaintiff essentially throughout the case was seeking to prevent any other party from exercising copyrights in the software, if that answers the question.
I'm going to take this in a slightly different direction. Do you agree with your opposing counsel's description of the material at stake being copyrightable material? That was what the claim or civil theft claim was based on, was copyrightable material.
Yes, absolutely.
And so your defense, as I think I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that federal copyright law was at issue because your claim is you owned the copyright to this copyrightable material, and therefore by owning the copyright, you own the material itself. In other words, it's, in this case anyway, the copyright was not separable from the software. And if you owned the copyright, you owned the software and there was no civil theft. Am I understanding that theory of the defense?
Our position was that Holonics owned the software, including the copyright. So from the beginning of the case, it claimed we developed the software and there was an agreement, and the one single issue that was really holding up a finalized written agreement was ownership and transfer of the ownership of the software. So Holonics always claimed ownership of the software, including the copyrights.
Now, as I understand it, Holonics didn't come up with this idea by itself. It was approached by a steward.
Correct.
So it was actually hired to develop this.
Well, the word hire, I think, is a little bit...
Well, you know where I'm going with this. Okay. Section 201B talks about presumptive ownership with the employer or the person who commissioned the work. And so where I'm going with this, as you probably have figured out by now, why is your instruction an accurate... You'd assume copyright law was appropriate. Why are the tendered instructions here accurate statements of law under the facts of this case?
Regarding the, to back up just a little bit, there was no ruling or decision by the court as to whether this was a work for hire. That's a factual issue that had to either be determined as, you know, there's no factual issue in dispute and just determined as a matter of law by the trial court, which it never was, or submitted to the jury for consideration.
Well, what was it then? I mean, what was this arrangement then? If it wasn't that Stewart came to Holonics and asked Holonics or hired Holonics to develop the software?
It was, from our perspective, it was a independent contractor relationship. And the work for hire issue is, it's very factually based on, you know, who's acting as an employer and so forth. So from our perspective, it was an idea that was brought, but Helonix never viewed itself as acting as an employee of Steward Software. It was an independent contractor.
But they're being paid to develop something, right? So isn't that an issue?
It's a factual issue, but this was never determined by the court. It was not even presented to the jury. We'll concede that could be an issue that could be determined by a fact finder, but it was never presented as an issue to the trial court. It was never presented to the jury for determination.
You know, I don't think there was any dispute that there was some sort of contractual arrangement here that Steward was paying Helonix to develop the software. Some sort of contract, perhaps the terms of that were somewhat ambiguous or ill-defined, but that Helonix was doing this at Steward's behest.
Correct. But my understanding is that work for hire requires some sort of an agreement, and there was no agreement. The agreements that were in place stated that Helonix was acting as an independent contractor. And again, we're getting to the issue that this was a factual dispute. We can't step in now and say, well, actually, there's a legal determination that...
What was actually submitted to the jury? This is a tort action, isn't it? Right? It's civil theft, civil conversion. Theft. Okay, so there are elements to that tort. What were the instructions actually given? I'm very unclear now what the jury was presented with, because I think the jury had to be considering the ownership of the materials and delivering the verdict it did, so... Just set the frame for us, would you?
The jury was provided with basically the stock instruction on civil theft, or an instruction that went through the Eitan versus Unger elements of civil theft. And without having it directly in front of me, but it stated that the jury had to find that Helonix and or Mr. Kopcho exercised authority, without permission over property of Steward Software Company with the intent to permanently deprive. So they were given some indication that they had to find that this was property of Steward Software, but they were given no further instructions as to how to determine ownership of the property, whatever the property was, and that was not specified.
Well, that's based on the body of evidence that was offered at trial, right?
Correct.
I mean, so ownership had to be part of this presentation to the jury, and if not the issue.
Correct. Okay. However, our position has always been that if ownership as the key issue before the jury, they had to be given some way to determine ownership. And where they're determining ownership of copyrightable materials, they were presented information and evidence regarding the fact that this was software that was being claimed to have been stolen. They couldn't make a legally valid decision or verdict regarding civil theft against the defendants unless they were given instructions regarding federal copyright law and the various pieces that go into that, as far as the authorship, potentially an agreement to the contrary regarding ownership, transfer that's required to be in writing, and so forth. These were all pieces that the jury was never presented, never told what the law was. All they were given was this one instruction regarding civil theft and left to their own devices to determine what happened.
I asked you a question about federal copyright law. There's no issue here about infringement on a copyright at all. The entire issue, I guess, we're trying to slice up exactly what's been stolen, but or is allegedly stolen. But however we phrase that, the entire question is, how did Kopcho come by the material that he copyrighted? Isn't that right? Did he come by it legitimately in a way, or did he steal it and then copyright it? And it seems to me the way you're using ownership and talking about a presumption of ownership suggests that federal law intends to be saying something about having vetted the way in which a person gets the material that he copyrights. Is that true, or can that possibly be true about federal copyright law?
Could I ask you to rephrase the key question?
What's at issue here, isn't it, is whether your client committed a civil theft in coming by the property that he copyrighted. And I'm trying to ask you, is there anything about the copyright process or federal law that would suggest in any way that it has anything to say about the way in which your client came by the property? It seems to me you're looking for a presumption from the fact that he copyrighted this material that he acquired it in a legal way. And is there something about federal copyright law that would suggest that's what it intends at all?
Well, our position has been that Hawanix was the owner of the copyright by virtue of authorship, which is addressed by the federal copyright statute. And unless there was some agreement to the contrary between the parties, that is the presumption.
Maybe just very briefly, you could tell me what's involved in getting the copyright. What did your client have to show in order to get a copyright?
All a party has to show is that they created this work. It's a copyright protects the actual produced work rather than the idea or the concept that led into the work. It actually protects the creative work in just like a painting or a book or the code that was drafted by the employees of Hawanix. So the
fact that your client acquired a copyright says nothing and doesn't purport to say anything in terms of federal law about the contractual relationships between your client and the plaintiff in this case. Is that right?
Correct. The parties could contract differently than the presumption that's under federal copyright law.
So with regard to how your client acquired this property, what the contractual relationships were, what does federal law have to say about that? Why was it relevant at all to know what federal law says about the ownership of a copyright and what would constitute infringement on that copyright?
Is extremely relevant because the fact that there was no, as the disputed evidence was, that there was no agreement between the parties precisely how ownership was to be transferred. And I think that's a key element in all of this, is that they were disputing how ownership of the software was to be transferred. So if this was just presumptively already Steward Software's, I don't understand why they were even discussing a transfer. But the jury needed to know what the presumption was to understand that there was a dispute as to when and how these rights were to be transferred to the plaintiff, and then make a determination of whether there was any such agreement to begin with.
Relying on the presumption again. And so by presumption, see, I'm not sure what you understand that to be. Do you think that presumes that tells the jury that they are to presume something about the contract between these two parties?
The jury is to presume that the author of the software is the owner, and only if there is an agreement to the contrary, then they are to consider what was the agreement of the parties. If that answers the question, okay. Just wanted to go to just a few other points regarding some of the plaintiff's statements. I think we've made it clear, but Mr. Kopcho's position here and throughout trial has not been that, it has always been that Hawanix is the owner of the software. The registration by Rough Dogs really is not relevant to the issues that we're dealing with. Hawanix was the author of the software. There's been no dispute that Hawanix did the work in creating the software. And so, to be clear, Hawanix has claimed the ownership, and Mr. Kopcho has always acted on behalf of Hawanix. Plaintiff has made a lot of the fact that the separate company or the separately named company, Rough Dogs, registered the copyright, but at all times, Mr. Kopcho has been acting on behalf of Hawanix, and there was evidence presented at trial that Rough Dogs was a subsidiary of Hawanix.
Excuse me for a second, but you indicate in the, I think,
in the instruction you gave, the last sentence is registration of a copyright creates a presumption that the ownership exists with the registrant, which is inconsistent with what you just said. I thought you said rough dogs.
Correct, rough dogs.
So it seems to me you're buttressing the registration as part of the argument that you want to make about ownership. Is that wrong?
Our primary position was that the authorship creates the presumption. The registration creates a rebuttable presumption.
That's not exactly what you tendered, I don't think. Tendered. Yeah.
I think one piece to all of this is that Rough Dogs was not even a party to the case. So even if there was a presumption that some other party was the owner of the software, Steward Software itself was not an owner of the software. A party cannot claim that property it doesn't own has been stolen, just as a party who owns property cannot be claimed to have stolen its own property. So there's two pieces to the presumption, through the authorship and through registration. I just have a couple of minutes left. I can summarize plaintiff's argument.
Plaintiff's argument is they bought something, they bought a product that wasn't delivered, it was stolen by your client. I mean, I keep getting flipped back in the first year contracts on this whole issue. I mean, you don't have to have a written contract, right? I mean, you can enter into a relationship to buy a product. The product was to be developed, it wasn't delivered, instead it was stolen. I mean, isn't that the theory of the tort? Isn't that what was presented to the jury?
That's plaintiff's theory. However, that essentially converts every single contract claim into a civil theft claim. If you state that...
I think you have to show there was a wrongful conversion of a product that, you know, you paid for.
Correct, but if there is no agreement as to who
An agreement. Agreement is implied by the business relationship. I think it's the theory of this case. Maybe I'm wrong.
I agree that the parties were operating under some oral agreement.
Now, how much money did the plaintiff pay for this product that it didn't receive, in effect, was deprived of the benefit of?
Plaintiff has stated that it's over $300,000.
Okay, how much did your client pay for?
My client, through his companies, spent over a year with employees and other independent contractors and subcontractors putting forth the work.
For who?
On behalf of Steward Software.
Right, thank you.
However,
that's what the jury had before it, wasn't it?
Correct, but that's a breach of contract claim. That's a claim that you agreed to do this work, and the other party agreed to pay for it. And the dispute that arose and that led to this entire case was that Steward Software decided it wasn't happy and it wasn't going to make payments that were contractually due. And as a result, Helonic stopped doing work. That's a contract issue. That's not...
Well, it did a little bit more than stop doing work. It also registered the product as theirs.
Correct.
Yeah.
Based on the fact that under the standards of the industry and the authorship, that they had a right to the copyright. They didn't have to go register it. That presumption was already there, but they did that to protect itself from the fact that this entire relationship had broken down. Just to briefly conclude, we believe that the Court of Appeals properly determined that federal copyright law was at issue in this case due to the nature of the property at issue, and that it was reversible error for the trial court to refuse to instruct the jury on federal copyright law. And we would respectfully request that this court affirm the Court of Appeals decision. Thank you.
Hello?
why is this a tort suit and not a breach of contract suit?
Well, we certainly argued that case, or we made that argument, and the Court of Appeals has remanded to the trial court, and that's not part of this proceeding here, whether to determine whether the economic loss rule applies. So you don't need to reach that point today. The Court of Appeals has already remanded, and there will be further proceedings before the trial court with respect to that issue. We contend, and I don't have the citation on the tip of my tongue, but there was a case that we cited at the trial court level and in front of the Court of Appeals that even when there's a contract, you can have theft. But that's something that's been remanded and is going to have to be decided by the trial court anyway. That's not within the purview, I believe, of this writ. A couple of quick points. You asked, what do you have to do to get a copyright? What do you have to prove to get a copyright? You don't have to prove anything. All you have to, and this was testified in court, how they got the copyright. Mr. Kopter told someone, file this copyright application, say that we're the author, and true or not, you get the copyright. So you don't have to prove anything to get a copyright. It's just filling out a form. Also, the defendants claimed at the time of trial, not that Holonix owned the property. They claimed that Rough Dog Software owned the property. In the last page of our opening brief, the jury instruction that was tendered to the court asked the jury to find that Rough Dog Software Inc., not Holonix, the Rough Dog Software Inc. was the owner of the intellectual property. So they contended at trial, with all due respect to Mr. Sturman, they contended at trial that it was Holonix Inc. If I could just have about one minute to sum up, I know I'm out of time. I hope that this court will not lose sight of the facts of this case, which are egregious. There is no dispute that Holonix was hired. Ms. Sturman cannot, with a straight face, argue to this court that it was a disputed issue of fact as to whether this was a work for hire. On July 12, 2007, when Holonix was months behind schedule and way, way, way over budget, and Steward Software Company had paid for everything, all the work that had been done, they shut off my client's access.
Mr. Villanueva, I think you better wrap it up.
Okay. We submit that Mr. Kopcho got a fair trial with counsel. The issue of ownership was fairly tried. The copyright issue was a smokescreen. The instructions proposed by the defendants were properly rejected and not supported by the evidence and misstatement of the law. And we believe that the Court of Appeals judgment with respect to copyright should be reversed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. After the court, I want to thank both the attorneys for their briefs as well as their arguments. The case will stand submitted.